Blog Talk Radio.
Three big fight events on. I watched all three of them. Realistically. But big no win for Cunningham and Tarver there. I don't know if you were too excited watching that fight, but I think both.
Well, it's funny because your emails as the fight was going on, you're like, did someone tell Tarver that he's that he's actually supposed to be fighting?
Yep.
And unfortunately, it was just a kind of like I said on there, it was going to be Cunningham's activity, but, you know, less against Tarver's infrequent but more effective punches. Tarver, better chin. Cunningham, I mean, the few times that Cunningham was getting wobbled a little bit, I think they were more from him being off balance, maybe their feet getting tangled up.
Right.
The difference of Cunningham throwing more or Tarver landing significantly less, but better. And that was one of the things I said, was that I said a draw is a very real possibility in this fight. Lo and behold.
Yeah. He said it was going to be very close, too, if Tarver won. And, of course, it was a split draw, which is different than a majority draw or unanimous draw, of course. So each guy had a win.
Right. I think I've only ever seen a unanimous draw once.
Yeah.
Where all three judges had a draw.
That's tough. It was funny.
I still remember the ring announcer was like, all three judges scored the fight the same. But sometimes you'll hear it like, say if it was a fight where one fighter clearly wins, say, 10 rounds. All three judges scored the same, 190 for your winner, Joe Schmo. So this is like, all three judges scored the same, 114, 114. This fight is a unanimous draw.
Kind of funny because Steve Fleetwood, the guy that, actually, we've talked to Steve. We've had, he was talking about the scorecard that he came up with, and he's like, I don't really know, though. It could go either way. I don't know.
Yeah.
Right. So
I'll tell you, it was also, you know, a little bit funny on there was when the fight was over and they were kind of standing next to each other in the ring, and they were still kind of jawing at each other, like, I think I won. No, I think I won. And then one of the trainers was like, all right, guys, good fight. Let's let the judges decide now.
Yeah, that was cool. But, you know, I thought it was a matter of more Cunningham just doesn't look right the way that he boxes sometimes. He's not turning his punches over. He's got the physicality. He kind of reminded me of Chuck Congo again, the guy that with all the physique and just not putting it together somehow with power and knockouts. You'd think he'd be destroying people. But I just don't know what it is. He gets frustrated easy. He was thrown off by the southpaw thing, I think. That was difficult for him to get over. But, you know, I thought he held his own, and then Tarver just kept letting him get back into the fight. That was the big thing. I think that's what gave him the draw more than anything. But he also threw a shitload of punches. It just didn't land a lot.
Right, exactly.
We got Tom, Psychic Tom. We have
All right, here we are. Yeah, so I guess I missed the first minutes or so of the recap of last Friday night's action. So I guess I'll just jump in.
Well, action in the first fight, not so much in the second fight.
Yeah, I was. I gotta say though, yeah, the second fight wasn't a barn burner. But since I'm such a big fan of both guys, well, I mean, I may have had Tarver up a point or so, but I mean, it was close, and I'm kind of happy it went the way it did.
Right. Yeah, me too. Absolutely. And that was one of the things I was saying to Rich, as I said last week, was it was a fight where it was going to be the story of Cunningham's activity. He was going to throw more punches, but harder punches.
Yeah.
And he looked a little soft in the midsection. He really did. And I don't think, like, Cunningham, like, did stumble a few times, but I don't think he was ever seriously hurt by any punch.
Right.
I think it was more the fact that maybe I think their feet might have got a little bit together, or he's more off balance. But yeah, a draw was definitely a good verdict, because some of those, I mean, those early rounds were just, there was, you know, just really nothing there to score. And you were giving it to, you know, Cunningham's activity. And then some of the rounds was like, okay, yeah, this, because he landed punches that were more effectual.
Right.
And,
It was close. It was razor close, and that's why, I mean, if you're going to make a serious argument for either guy, it'd be hard to refute it. I mean, some of them almost like flip a coin. Glad I wasn't a judge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. then we had the Saturday night fights were pretty good. Marco Hook.
Well, that was also on the Friday night card.
Oh, that was Friday too?
Right, right.
That was
right.
The same card. That's why I said the second fight wasn't as action packed, but the first fight was.
Rich, I was thinking about your campaign about defense, and Huck had that typical European style, which I guess had been working good for him. But to me, and I want to get you guys to weigh in on this, he seemed a little mechanical to me. A little robotic in some ways, a little stiff. What do you guys think?
Yeah, to me, it was mostly the jab. I mean, he was doing the Chad Dawson jab without the mixing in of real quick jabs and real power jabs.
Mm-hmm.
He was just pawing. Just like, you know, a cat does with a dead mouse.
Yeah.
Or, you know, one that's not wanting to kill. Just pawing at it. And the thing that makes that effective, even in MMA when John Jones does it with his fingers spread open, the thing that makes that effective is when you don't know if it's coming as a pawing jab or if it's coming as a quick jab meant to really just kind of maybe cut you open or keep you off, or if it's coming as a power jab meant to maybe knock you off. So, you know, Mark Chuck is the kind of guy that's built on the 1-2s. So if you don't have your one going correct, the 2s, you know, it's going to be harder to land.
Right,
and
right, exactly.
The way he was just pawing, it just seemed like he was playing with the guy and being wicked safe. And that's a guy who can knock you out, especially with the hooks, too. I mean, it says H-U-C-K in the last name, but it's pronounced Hook.
Yeah, I like that.
He got a hook, all right.
But it looked like curtains. What was it, the seventh round, I believe? The seventh round. I mean, I just don't see how he came back. Oh, my God.
You know what? And I was telling a guy about it yesterday. I was talking to him. And I asked him if he saw it. He's like, he forgot the fight throw until he got the message just as the Cunningham fight was starting. I said, oh, man, you missed the best one. And I said, when Grabowski, or however you pronounce his name, went down, I said, and he put his hands like up like to his, I said, he looked like a guy struggling to do a last crunch out of about 1,000 and wasn't going to make it. And then I said, he pulled himself up, and the referee, Dave Fields, did a tremendous job because he could have stopped it right there. And he didn't. He looked at him and said, okay, you know, but you could tell he was watching. And what Grabowski did there was, I mean, I was watching the fight with my dad. I said, "Pop, this fight's over.
Right,
done." And he came out there and he started winging his hand. I said, "Well, shit." I said, "If he's going out on his shield swinging." And he threw a couple shots and he kind of backed Hook up a little bit. I'm like, "Oh, damn!" He backed him up. I'm like, "Oh, damn!" He landed one of them. And then he actually kind of survived by throwing punches. A lot of times guys will survive by holding on or running or, you know, maybe taking another knee as soon as they get touched and just take an extra point. But he survived by just basically going just, you know, figuring if I'm going out, I'm going down. And then he kind of punched himself back into the fight, and he was behind on the cards. And then he landed that combination in the 11th, and it was like, boom! And it was like, damn! And then a few moments later, it was over.
You know, I'll say this, but yeah, I didn't really have a favorite, but isn't that the kind of fight that makes us love the sport? I mean, just that
absolutely.
Punching you, that's a great phrase.
I was literally...
Yeah. I got to steal that phrase from you. Punched his way back into the fight. That was just, you can't teach heart like that. You can't.
No, you can't.
And go
The one thing it kind of reminds me of, and like I said, on a much, 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 much lesser level, and it was one thing that just, it just made me remember, when I was first starting out, I was 18 years old, hadn't had an accident. Right. And my first sparring session up at Lock Haven, the coach, you know, because I was kind of, you know, I thought I was a lot better than I was. And so the coach wanted to teach me a lesson, Dr. Cox. So he put me in with one of his All-American fighters and basically with the instructions to teach him a lesson. And this guy thumped me up pretty good, you know, so humbled me a little bit. And then I was kind of shy about myself because from a guy that, like, I had come from fighting on the streets and, you know, guys used to be intimidated of me, and I'm not trying to say that like a thing, but because I was here and because I could punch and I had a little bit of skills, but I didn't have boxing skills yet. I thought I did, but I didn't. And so now I got humbled a little bit. So now I was a little bit shy on myself, and I had a few sparring sessions, but I wasn't supremely confident. And he had taken to Rockview State Penitentiary in right outside of State College, PA, where our assistant coach was like one of the athletic directors and ran their boxing program. So he would always bring us there to spar with the inmates. Now, I'm 18 years old. I just turned 18 2 months prior to this. And a month before, I had my first sparring session, got my tail kicked. And I've been doing okay in sparring sessions with guys around my own same level, but nothing great. And he puts me in there with this 200-pound, basically lifer. And this guy in the first round, I mean, if one of the first things he did was he stepped on my feet and hit me in the mouth and knocked me on my ass. And this guy is thumping me up, up and down, thumping me up and down. And I remember Dr. Cox had stopped one of the previous sparring sessions because the kid from Lock Haven was getting beat up a little bit. And I remember thinking, man, I wish he'd stop mine right now because I'm getting my tail kicked. And then what did you just say to yourself? I remember going back to the corner, and this guy started laying into me, and I said, I have two choices right now. Either go down and hopefully Dr. Cox, or I start throwing punches. And I said, I grew up always in Philadelphia, and if Philadelphia, that was one thing that actually kept me on my feet. I just started throwing punches, and the guy backed up, and he actually backed up, and I got out of that corner. Nice. That's kind of where I came up with that phrase 20 years ago. I punched my way back into the fight.
Yeah, and that's what makes it crowd pleasing. I mean, that's, you don't see it that often, but when you do, man, what a great fight that was.
Well, we got one of the other fights to talk about too. We had PBC on Saturday night, is we had Lucien Boutte screaming, I'm back, after his fight. Quick finish there. And then, of course, right after that, Caleb Plant got an even quicker finish on a guy who flew 9 hours from Poland for the fight. Go down in 2 minutes and 19 seconds. I think he belongs on your worst boxers ever tape there, Tony.
Worst channel?
Elusive fighting. Thanks for that memory. Thanks for that. I remember seeing that, and you know, I wrote what I said about it. Oh my God,
that just came up in my YouTube feed for whatever reason. And I was like, oh, worst. I said, this looks pretty entertaining, and I clicked on that, and yeah, it was funny, and like the one guy that had like the mullet. Oh, they got, like, knocked out in, like, 30 seconds. And, like, cause I remember I don't remember if I saw that one live or not on USA Tuesday Night Fights, but I remember my... He's like, oh my God, I remember that fight. I remember them talking to the guy, and the guy was saying, like, how he was a street fighter, and he used to like to intimidate people and kick people's asses, and he was going to go in the ring and do the same. And then, like, he got in there, and you could just tell how much of a joke he really was. And then as soon as he gets hit, he was like, it was like the first time in his life he ever got hit. And he was like, oh, and then he fell over, and the other guy's like, was just holding his arms out and like shrugging, like, are you kidding me?
And you guys know something in common with every guy, whether it's boxing or MMA, when they mention street fighter, that's never a good sign as a rule, you know,
Exactly.
It's a little bit different in there. Maybe the only possible exception in MMA was Tank Abbott for a while, but he'd have trouble in today's environment. But yeah, that just seems to not be a good thing on your resume, you know. Never seems to work.
Well, going back to one of the first things I said about, you know, Dr. Cox wanting to humble me a little bit. You know, when I was 18, like I said, when I was in my teenage years, you know, I was in high school. You know, in high school, you tough. Just, you know, get an identity. Remember, I was an only, I didn't have any brothers or sisters before, kind of paved the way, and I didn't have anybody else younger than me kind of looking up to me to be a leader. And so you get all the attention from your parents, and sometimes that's good, I wanted to stand out in school. You know, we had other kids that were on the football team, the baseball teams, and they were like the superstars. And I played football, but I was okay. I was mediocre. You know, I wasn't a standout star. I wasn't one of the real, real smart kids, even though I would have considered myself a nerd. You know, I wasn't, you know, one of the real popular kids. You know, I wasn't, you know, one of the real, real handsome kids. I was a chubby kid. You know, so, I mean, I just always felt inferior, and I wanted to do anything I could to stand out. So what did I do? You know, and I started trying to portray myself as a boxer, and I would, every day I'd hit the bag. I watched some of my old home movies, and I cringe at myself how bad I was, but I thought I was doing great. And then, you know, I had a couple street fights, and I kicked a few people's asses, and oh my God, I'm an ass kicker now. So it was like, you know, I felt that was my way to reach out, you know, way to get an identity. And when I went to Lock Haven, that was my whole thing. I'm going to box, I'm going to box, I'm going to box. I remember telling people that whole time, I'm a boxer, I'm a boxer, I'm a boxer. And they're like, where do you train at? Well, I just hit the bag at my home. How many amateur fights have you had? Well, none yet. I'm like, you're not a boxer. Yeah, I am. I watch Tuesday Night Fights, and I do what they do, and I watch videos on how to tape hands and hit the bag and all that. But you're not a boxer. But I thought I was. And I was saying to Dr. Cox, and he was like, oh, yeah, so how many have you had any fights? Have you sparred at all? No, but I have these fights on the street and everything, and you could see him like, oh, okay. Garrett, I got one of these guys. And it's funny, because a couple years later, guess who ended up being one of his hired guns, dishing guys like that out? Me.
Yep.
Just like he... The guy Dirk Weaver is the hired gun to straighten me out. Years later, I became one of his hired guns to basically straighten out the big mouths.
Yep, and it's interesting when you get started and you watch it and it looks like it looks simple and you think you're technical and you hear about it, read about it, but when you get in there, it's a whole another story, completely different. Come on.
Sure. We also had Roy Jones Jr. in action over the weekend. Somebody, one of you guys sent me a link on that, didn't you? About fans suffered. Even though Roy Jones Jr. won.
I heard he won like sixth round, but I didn't really hear a whole much a lot about it.
I guess it was kind of a crappy fight, but he's 46 years old. He's still fighting. Actually, there was kind of another interesting article I ran across about him talking to Putin. He had like lunch with Putin over there in Russia.
Wow.
Where the fight was. And apparently Putin wants him to be a Russian citizen.
Wow.
Like, wow.
He's him to be a Russian citizen and come over there and fight whenever he wants, have a house there, whatever. They're buddies. So, you know, Obama can't get along with Putin, but...
You know, I'll have to see if I can find that. There's a painting, and it was about $110. I might spring for it, with Obama and Putin in the cage. And it was, I think my money'd be on Putin. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but that's my psychic impression. My crystal ball says bet on Putin in that one.
I don't think my basketball skills will come in handy there. Unless he was dead. Anyway, yeah, that's pretty interesting. And also another political story. I don't know if you got the big Trump interview that was all over CNN this morning, but
I heard about it.
Of course, he, you know, mentions his issues with women. I guess, you know, he said some shit about women that he shouldn't have. Of course, Rosie O'Donnell had the big spat with him over the years. So he's in trouble. You know, people don't think he likes women. And he said something about some supermodels not 10 anymore. That was kind of funny. Like Donald Trump is a 10.
But Donald Trump's a good-looking guy.
The reason I mentioned all this, he mentioned Ronda Rousey as you know, that's the kind of woman I like, Ronda Rousey. And then Ronda Rousey came out today, I guess, and said she's not a Trump supporter. Getting all circles of news coverage here.
Yeah, and that also came up in an interview about the two women that made it through Ranger School. Because that's the washout rate's very, very high there. And I don't know if you guys have ever watched CrossFit, but there are some gals in CrossFit that are phenomenal in all aspects of fitness, including strength. I mean, there are a few that I think, definitely, I don't think they lowered the standards at all.
And probably the only president who's ever appeared in a WWE match.
Yeah, right. The shave your head match.
That was crazy. So the fact that he's kind of sticking his fingers in people's eyes here. Getting shit. He didn't even have to have a single commercial. I mean, the news coverage just cycles around him now. Unbelievable. But it just goes to show you, it's the same reason why people like Dana White, even though I think a lot less people like Dana White than Donald Trump right now. I'm sure. But, you just got to be that alpha male type, you know, shit, and, you know, pretend like you're doing something different, so... People will watch you, and then, you know, as long as you don't say something really, really, really stupid, which is kind of funny because people are like, you know, when's he going to make a mistake that ends it all? And he just doesn't make one. So many times where it could have been it. Like, you know, Howard Dean, all he did was make out a scream. He's done with the race. Trump can call somebody a fat pig and... Yeah, call me not a war hero and all this other shit. Nothing. Unbelievable. But yeah. Anything with Affliction, though. Nobody's asked him about that. Oh, he couldn't resurrect Affliction. I thought it was actually interesting, you know, coming from my experience with the Fertitta family and their casinos out in Vegas. Here they are at the debate asking Trump about his bankruptcy of an Atlantic City casino of his, and they're talking about, like, you know, a couple thousand, something like that, and however many million. Well, the Fertittas bankrupted their casinos when they were $6 billion in debt. $6 billion. With a B. So they did a lot worse kind of shit with the laws out there in Vegas than what Trump ever did. I mean, Trump's bankruptcy... That was like nothing compared to what they did. That was like a fart in the wind compared to a nuclear bomb. But anyway, we got a lot of other stuff to cover. Cathal Pendred is being tapped as a potential first opponent for CM Punk.
Okay.
Talking smack, saying that... CM Punk's pad work is like a boxer size workout. So I guess Dana White's been teaching him.
That's funny.
So Punk, CM Punk, according to Sal Pendren, he said the day that he got signed with the UFC, I said that the chick magnet fight was the lottery ticket. He is the lottery ticket. I think every fighter should want that fight. That's in the guys that are in his division. So I definitely wouldn't turn it down. I actually think that I'm in the pole position for it now because nearly every guy in middleweight and welterweight that has called the guy out, and he hasn't responded to any of them. I was having a great time with it, to be honest. I thought it was brilliant. That just makes me think that maybe this guy is delusional as some of the fans that he has and actually thinks that he could beat me in a fight. He also certainly feel like he's responding to me just because he feels he might have a shot or else he feels like he could maybe at least snare with me. I've seen it in a lot of his interviews since he joined the UFC. He looks more scared now. I think he looks more sure of himself now than he did when he first decided to do this. I think he's in the gym now and he's having a hard time and he's realized I bit off more than I can chew now. I reckon he thinks Pendred is the way to go, and if that's the way he wants to go, there's a couple hundred thousand reasons I think it would be the way to go too. He also added, my striking has looked atrocious in the UFC, so I have no problem ripping it out of myself. But CM Punk's footage made me look good. I've seen boxer size classes where people were hitting the pads better than that. Yeah, well, at least he admits he sucks. That's all. Talk about lucky. I mean, he doesn't even have to fight to get into the house. He's losing left and right when he gets the contract, despite not winning the show. And he's calling out CM Punk and himself, too, at the same time.
Yeah, he's just been a terrible disappointment. You remember the hype on the show that this guy is going to be the second coming of, this is the European invasion here. Best guy over there. Boy, what a letdown.
Not good. So here's a story. It's football season coming up. Lots of stuff going on. Training camps and everything like that. Preseason games. So, come to my surprise the other day, I'm reading the internet, and what do I find? The New Orleans Saints did something interesting this week. Integrated a little boxing to their training. Can you guess how they did it? Anyone?
Pad work, I would say.
Sort of. They were doing it on the kick return. How do you think they used the kick return? Well, they used boxing gloves for their guys' return.
Oh, wow, no shit.
Basically, if you can catch a glove with a fist, I mean, if you can catch a football with a fist without a glove on, obviously that's pretty good. But this is with gloves on. They were trying to catch punts. it really forces them to put their body in the correct position to catch a ball. So it's a way of taking their hands away, keeping their elbows together, and really locating the ball with their feet, getting set. So it's pretty funny. They've got a picture of a guy with boxing gloves on, ball coming right at him. Hands up! So I thought I'd mention that little unique training regimen. We've got, of course, we got a big UFC event coming up this weekend. Again, it's a very slow MMA weekend. It's all this UFC card. It's a fight night from Canada, Saskatchewan, and Max Holloway is in the main event against Charles Oliveira. Holloway is 13-3. Oliveira is 20. I really I'll go with this one, but if I had to take a little bit more experience there, Oliveira, and he's got a nasty guillotine, nasty. So Holloway's got a skinny neck, so I'm sure he's going to be watching out for that. But Oliveira thinks that even when people know it's coming, so definitely going to be a close fight. I think both guys are pretty good on their feet, pretty good all around. Good fan-friendly fight right there. Then the co-main event, Neil Magny just got his ass kicked not too long ago. First loss in a long time. We're going up against Eric Silva in the co-main event.
I definitely have to appreciate that attitude. You know, a lot of guys wouldn't do it this quick, but that guy's got a lot of belief in himself.
And Eric Silva, 18-5, Neil Magny, 15-4. That's a great matchup. We've got Josh Berkman coming in the next fight, 27-11, fighting Patrick Cote, who's 21-9. A couple guys have been around a while right there. We got Chad LaPrize, 10-0, fighting Francisco Trinaldo, who's 17-4. Olivier Aubin Mercier, who's 6-1, fighting Tony Sims, who's 10-2. Marna Moros, who's 6-0, never heard of her, fighting Laterno, who's 7-3. We got Daniel Jolly, 5-0, fighting Misha Kirkunov, and Misha, in this case, is a guy.
9-2. Oh, what? I can imagine how that went in school. Wow.
Right. Eve Jabouin, who's 20-10, will be fighting Felipe Arantes, who's 16-7. Nikita Krylov, 18-4, fighting Marcos Rogério de Lima, who is 13-2-1. And we got Sam Stout way down on the card in this one. He's 20-11-1, fighting Frankie Perez, who's 9-2. We got Chris Beal, 10-1, fighting Chris Kalades, who is 8-2. And the first fight of the night, Shane Campbell, 11-3, fighting Elias Silverio. And then we go to the boxing schedule. Big one over in Russia. Speaking of Russia and Roy Jones Jr. being best buds with Putin, we got Grozny, Russia, hosting a fight on Saturday night. Manuel Char at heavyweight, who is 28-3, fighting Maris Bredis, or Briedis, who is 16-0. So, and then the co-main event there is not even worth mentioning. Yeah, nothing but Manuel Char is back in action. Going on this weekend. Bear with me here for a minute. Actually, not much boxing going on this weekend at all.
I didn't really know of anything going on this weekend.
Everything is going on in Russia. There's another one on Sunday from Russia. Dmitry Chudinov, he's 14-1-2, fighting Adrian Luna Flores, who's 18-3. It's for the vacant WBA International Middleweight title. And Dmitry Sukovsky is also on this one. He's I think he's been on ESPN before. He's 22-3, fighting Dilmurad Satibaldiev, who is 8-1 at light heavyweight. An interim WBA World Light Heavyweight title is on the line between Stanislav Kashtanov, who is 33-1, and Felix Valera, who's 12-0. And then we've got the lightweights, international super lightweight title for vacant WBA international super lightweight title between Ramal Amanov, who's 8-0, and Ramzes Payano, who's 19-1. And our former guest is fighting, actually, Chop Chop Corley is fighting Friday night, I believe. I don't know, I just shut it off by accident, but not a big fight, but he is the main event, wherever it is. So we'll just leave it at that for now. See what else we got going on. Hang on a minute. And Tom, you sent me something while we're waiting here for the other news about weight cutting. Yeah. Gilbert Melendez.
Something I know a lot about.
Gilbert Melendez talking about going up in weight or going down in weight. What was it?
Well, yeah, it was Diego Sanchez. If you remember season one of The Ultimate Fighter, he was a middleweight, 185. And then he dropped down to welterweight, and then he dropped down to lightweight, and that's when BJ was in his prime. So now he's going to try featherweight. But I like to critique that Eric Wong had said about that, that the problem is he thinks he's going to be such a better wrestler at 145. Well, does that mean that all the guys at featherweight are bad in wrestling technique? I don't think so. And it's just kind of the wrong mindset. And it just flashed back on one of our former guests when he made that statement. He says, when your body's not at the weight it's supposed to be, things, you know, it's just, it's a problem. And we've seen that going up and going down. But I thought it was kind of strange that all of a sudden Diego's going to take off weight and be the big monster and be the most technical guy. I mean, if anything, I think you guys would agree that sometimes the lighter weight divisions are a little better technically, because they have to be. They don't have that big power. So we'll see how it's going to go. A weight cut can make a huge difference when you're coming down that much.
Well, the thing is, in MMA, it's a lot different than in boxing. In MMA, muscle endurance and all that comes into play. And if you're going down in weight from a higher weight, yeah, you might feel like a bigger guy there, but you're going to have less muscle power than you did at the higher weight. You're going to lose a little muscle. You're going to probably... you're going to probably feel maybe at first a big difference, but it's going to catch up to you because that guy's just a fighter like anybody else, just because maybe you were a little bit heavier a week earlier and now you're lighter. I don't think it's going to make all that much of a difference. I don't think it ever has for a lot of people. Unless, you know, you have a situation where, you know, you've maybe two classes above that weight class for years, and then all of a sudden, boom, you know, you've figure out how to come down to a lower weight. Then you might feel, hey, you know, this is a big advantage, you know. But I think it really is sort of a difference if you're like maybe a Daniel Cormier coming down from heavyweight to light heavyweight at the higher spectrum of the weights. Because, like, for me, wrestling in high school at 171 while only weighing 160, I can tell you, when you're in there with a guy who either feels bigger or really is bigger wrestling, mm-hmm. you can really tell the difference. And I had a couple guys that I had to wrestle who were absolutely jacked at their weight. And here I am, I don't really have a lot of muscle on me. I wasn't fat or anything, but I wasn't chiseled, that's for sure. And I had to wrestle mm-hmm. these guys. Right. But, yeah, I wouldn't do it again if I had the chance. I would rather wrestle my own weight.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, again, and how often prior to Michael Spinks beating Larry Holmes did we see light heavyweights move up to heavyweight unsuccessfully and fight for the title? I mean, I'm sure we could go on with quite a litany of guys that have tried it. Go ahead, going
well,
the opposite.
I'll tell you the big example I remember of that. You had some fighters that did well. Ezra Charles did well. Archie Moore had some success, but when he hit the upper echelon, you know, he kind of ran out of success. But the one that I remember, that it was almost like it was night and day. It was almost like at light heavyweight he was fighting amateurs, and at heavyweight he was fighting professionals, was Bob Foster. Bob Foster, I mean, was destroying guys at light heavyweight, and then he was getting
right.
destroyed at heavyweight.
Right, exactly.
You know, look at Anthony Johnson. He was absolutely
right.
killing himself to make weight. And then obviously decided, all right, I'm not going to do the weight cut anymore. I'm just going to accept it. I'm going to go light heavyweight. And he's done phenomenally.
Right.
Ronda Rousey's a possible opponent. Cyborg, you know, she's probably going to kill herself trying to get down to 135 to face
Ronda. I've given up on that. I don't think it's going to happen. I've just given up. Then there'll be some other excuse. So I got to put it out of my mind. Not good for my blood pressure. But the whole point of this was about, again, I wish I could remember that former guest of ours, what his name was, but his point was so good about that, that no matter if you're going up or down, I mean, and you know, Tony, you've been all around the different weights, and sometimes, you know, you just know this is either too light or too heavy. And that's just the question here, and I don't think he's going to be more technical and you know, at 145 than he was. That's what he seems to be hoping for, and it just was kind of a curious mindset. I mean, he's always fun to watch. He doesn't hold anything back. He always brings it, for sure. But, it's just that phrase. It's just stuck in my head. We've seen it go both ways, and I think...
Sometimes...
All right.
Well, it's like sometimes you can't fight with nature either. And I'll bring up the example of a guy like Bernard Hopkins. Bernard Hopkins, you know, was a great middleweight champion. And as, I mean, Bernard won the middleweight title, I think he was like, you know, early 30s. Because he finally fought Felix Trinidad, which was 01. He was 5 years into his reign, I think. 5 or 6 years into his reign, he was 36. So he would have been around 30, 31 when he first won the title. And then he makes 20 successful title defenses. Now, when he was fighting guys like De La Hoya and Trinidad back in 2001, 2003, 2004, he was getting as low as 157. By his last few title defenses at middleweight, he was hitting 160 every time on the dot. And I remember one of those fights, I think it was one of the Jermaine Taylor fights, he had to come back and make the weight again. Now, I don't think he was killing himself to make the weight, but you could tell he didn't have the same snap. And those Taylor fights, even the fight before that against Howard Eastman and, you know, you could tell he just didn't have the same energy levels. And then he bulks up to light heavyweight, and I remember, this is before I started writing for Fight Unlimited, but I remember saying to people, when that fight was over, I said, oh, damn, man, he said he was going to retire after this fight at like 41 or however old he was. And I said, that's a shame. I said, because the way he looked tonight, I'm like, this guy could fight 4 or 5 more years. He's fighting nearly 10 years now after that fight. I didn't think that was going to happen. But he looked so good because he was natural middleweight for a lot of years. But the body was saying pretty much anymore, it's like, dude, 160, you know, I can't do it. I can't do it. Now, other times, right, his technique didn't really get any better. He was still Bernard Hopkins.
Right. That's the point.
So, I mean, he might got a little bit more tricky. But like you said, his body, if I know right now they're trying to fit again. Now, when I made 165, I killed myself. But I used to make, you know, I mean, 175 to 185 was my natural weight. For me to try to make that right now would be a struggle. 180, I would really, really struggle with that. You know, I'm down to like 207, 208 right now after losing a lot of that weight. And I still got, you know, some, you know, around the middle that can still go. But at the same time, can I still do 25 more pounds? That would be a challenge, you know? And, well, but that's 10 pounds higher than my local college. Or that was way to college. My body has evolved. Dare I say, I've gotten older. You know, my body has gotten bigger. You know, now, would I be, you know, as effective? Well, I might do better at heavyweight now than I would have done back then because my body has grown into it. Guys like Gainey Garcia. Garcia had to go up to 147 because he was killing himself to make 140. He was getting there. Now, if he did that a couple years ago, he might have had success against the 140 because his body wasn't mature enough. It has.
All right. Well, here's a story that you might not believe, but it's true. Now, everybody and their brother who follows mixed martial arts knows about the Stitch firing. Jacob Duran, otherwise known as Stitch, goes out, talks to Bloody Elbow, gives an interview talking about how the pay package for Cutman, all the Cutmen, sucks. The Reebok deal sucks. And for everybody. So So what happens? Stitch gets fired. Now, a guy named Lawrence, a UFC executive, has come out and claimed that Stitch's firing had to do with his comments on Reebok.
Oh, come on, come on. Give me a break.
So, I guess we don't need politicians anymore to lie to UFC executives here.
Jay.
This is a doozy. You've got, you know, what are they going to make us believe next? Because there is go back. Get all the commentary and the stories that were done in the wake of, can't do it. And they're trying to do it. But basically, Duran actually told Bloody Elbow, the same people that got him fired, he said, I got a call and basically was told that they, and throw out names, he said, where is it? So they didn't throw names out, but they don't want you to work any more UFC shows based on the article regarding the Reebok deal, is what Stitch said. But anyway, Lawrence Epstein is now doing a full denial as to why Duran was let go from the company. I just wish I had a recording of that lady from those Experian commercials, where she calls that guy Lawrence. Lawrence, listen here, Lawrence. So, here's a continuation. Even Joe Rogan reiterated the story on one of his podcasts, saying, so anytime someone like Stitch gets fired because he said something about, hey, this deal kind of sucks for me because I'm not making as much money, they fire him. Dana White also didn't contradict the narrative. He didn't personally handle Duran's dismissal. Instead, claiming that if he and Duran had been for real friends, Duran would have come to him with his complaints rather than airing them publicly. Even Reebok representative Michael Lunardelli didn't offer any contradictions to the idea that Duran was fired over his comments about the sponsorship deal. And Lunardelli said, I actually talked to Stitch before anyone in my organization. I did. I just called him man to man. I got his phone number and dialed him up myself. I was on the road and just said, I'm going to call him and talk to him, see what's going on. We had a great talk. We talked for about 40 minutes or so. It was man-to-man, just between him and I. It was a good discussion. It was great. I wish none of this happened, but it did. And again, it's not something that's in our control. I had a very brief conversation with UFC President Dana White. Dana was great about it, as he always is. He's like, that's not for you guys to worry about. That's between us. You guys shouldn't be taking any heat for that. Basically, that's our situation with our cut man handling that. That's basically what he said. That was it. You got to find your place here. There's a place where you can speak up about things, and there's a place where you can't. We're focused on what our job is. So, Lawrence, your explanation about the firing just don't add up with all this. But here's Lawrence's exact quote. Unequivocally, he says, unequivocally, his comments had nothing to do with him getting let go. I can't be more firm on that. There are a variety of reasons that he was let go, but nothing to do with his comments on Reebok. He's trying to paint this thing as he said some stuff about Reebok, and as a result, he was let go. It's just not true. That's not the reason why he was let go. I can't be clear on that. So
okay,
now,
what was missing from that was the specific reasons why he was let go. Because if you look at his history in boxing, there's never been any complaints about him. You look at his history working for other MMA organizations, no complaints. So, give me a break. What was the reason? What was the real reason, if it wasn't that? Well, we're not going to say. Yeah, right. Come on.
And then, on top of this, the UFC came back with a clarification regarding Epstein, saying, Jacob Stitch Duran has not been banned from UFC, and he is free to corner any athlete if they choose to pay for his services. We want to better cut men the opportunity to work UFC events. UFC certainly respects Duran's experience and accomplishments as a cut man and wishes him the best. So we will not comment about the other reasons that led to the ending of his independent contractor agreement with UFC, other than to say it had nothing to do with his comments about Reebok. So, all right, this is my thing. It had nothing to do with comments. I guess you're trying to say it had how people reacted to those comments? I don't know. Is that your out? I don't get it. Just doesn't make sense. How can you come out 3 weeks later and try to change the narrative? And the fact that you are trying to change the narrative is a big story to me. Why?
Right.
Why are you trying
exactly.
to change the narrative? You went after the wrong guy. And you set the wrong precedent. And now people are starting to say, look at the UFC. You know, say, if you don't like what they're doing, they're just going to throw you out or tell you to shut up or... front of the public eye and you know, Dana White's going to say some bad shit about you and the press is going to cover it. So I think a lot of fighters are going to say, no, I don't want to deal with that anymore. I'm going to go over to Bellator when my contract runs out. So hopefully they straighten that out, you know, Lawrence. I'd like your full explanation of what the other reason was, because nobody else has reported on any other reason other than his Reebok comments. But anyway, Sugar Mosley has come out and said some stuff about the lack of respect box shows for its female athletes. Female athletes, I should say. And he's basically that MMA treats their female athletes way better, and it sounds like he's a little bit jealous of Ronda Rousey's status in female MMA as opposed to folks like Maureen Che, who I interviewed before, the color of the real maybe. Basically, he's talking about how the women aren't getting the elevated status that the females are getting in MMA, and he's got a fight on his rematch with Ricardo Mayorga between Maureen Che and IBF Women's Super Bantamweight Champion Yulahan Avila. And he says, and it's an embarrassment to boxing that UFC and MMA show more respect for their women fighters than the boxing world does, and it's about time we... So, very interesting from Sugar Shane. You know, think of it this way. Ann Wolfe and Lucia Riker never got the kind of attention that Ronda Rousey. Katie Taylor just won the Olympics. Irish star. She hasn't really got a lot of attention. And she's on the upcoming card featuring Andy Lee against Saunders. So that's... another one that's, she's out there, Billy Joe Saunders. All right, so Sugar Shane's upset. He wants the females to get more attention. I don't know what the answer to that is either, you know. I guess, you know, you could always say that Ronda got where she was because she had that dynamic character and just unbelievable determination and heart to get where she got. And so she became kind of her own story. And you don't have a lot of female boxers who are really getting that kind of buzz. And it's, I mean, looking back, it's kind of hard to figure out where the buzz really started with Rousey. And, you know, what the magic elements were that brought to where she is today. And MMA, period, back into the spotlight where it's now kind of stuck. But anyway, I think that's about all we have. We're getting ready to wrap up the first hour here anyway, and I got no other boxing or martial arts news, no wrestling stuff, nothing. It's a slow news week.
Yeah, good. I've been out of sorts all night. I hate to give you one of my rants, and I am. You know, one thing I always take seriously That's something I call at the gym tornado time. And I understand why this happens. Why is it when they have the classes in the studio gym area, and the pretty girls are instructing with all the pretty girls in the class, they always end on time. I don't mind if they run late, but it's the ones like tonight when they bring in a separate instructor, and they're basically teaching Zoom like 70-year-olds that run late. And the woman comes out, like, I'm sitting there, and I already did my jump rope in the racquetball. I keep my hands taped, I'm perfectly loose, because the usual girls end on time. So I have everything. It was going to be late. I just knew it. And I'm sitting there, and I'm bouncing, and I'm actually dripping sweat. I'm warmed up perfectly. And I'm looking at the clock, and I'm like, okay, 5:20. I'm like, now, usually this is when the pretty girls leave and give me a few extra minutes. I'm like, I know this bitch won't do this. 5:28, now I'm starting to get annoyed. 5:30, now I'm like, okay, but, you know, now they're in their right to be in there till 5:30. 5:31, they're out of their right. 5:33, I'm starting to get annoyed. You know, and I'm starting to really yap my mouth. She comes out at 5:33 and says, are you here to teach the next class? I said, no. I said, I go in there between classes because I only have 15 minutes, and that way I can get my work in. Here to teach a nice class? I said, no. I go in between, and she turned around and went back in and kept instructing. I flipped management, and I'm like, this is bullshit. I've had complaints about this before. I start flipping out, and I'm mother effing everything. And then the class ends. I'm like, well, why don't you go in there now? I said, go in there now. After she already cut seven of my minutes and cut my time in half and get a full three rounds in, I said, that's not. And I started going off, and I'm mother effing everything. And she comes out, and she's like at the front desk. I guess filling out her timesheet. And I'm like, these fucking instructors here, God damn it, I'm so fucking tired of this. I'm going off. And, like, you can see everybody's looking. They're like, well, what are you out of here before I, you know, flip out the hell out on somebody? Never mind the fact that I already flipped out on a bunch of people. But I'm like, I predicted this, you know, 40 minutes ago. I said, watch. I said, at 4:30 tonight, I'm going to get real pissed off. Because I just knew it. So I didn't get my full workout in tonight, so I'm very jittery. So I had to rant on something. I did 8 of my rounds, but I wanted 15. So I'm going to have to do some push-ups or something because I'm ornery.
It's funny you mentioned that, Tony, because I just read an article like 20 minutes before the show about how Rumble Johnson, we were just talking about him with his weight cutting, he flipped out at the gym the other day over a yoga mat.
Yeah.
A yoga mat.
Screaming
at some bitch at the gym over this yoga mat thing, and then he went on to Twitter and got pissed about it. So now he's had to apologize. He's under investigation.
Yeah, bullshit, you don't have to apologize. Did they leave it in his area?
I don't know how it went down. I just kind of glanced.
Well, I'm going to tell you this. This is from a fitness center I used to go to about 10 years ago. I was only there a year. And they had like a little boxing room. The boxing room they had was not even the size of my bedroom. You know, it was a small little boxing room, but it was like maybe half the size of my bedroom. But it worked. It was enough room for me to do the pads when I was in there. It was enough room for me to hit the bag and hit the speed bag. It wasn't a big room, but it was my room. It was the boxing room. But the problem was a lot of these nitwits there that used to go to this gym used to think that they were too good to lift weights or do one of those exercise balls in the common room. So the weights or their exercise ball in the boxing studio. And, you know, that's fine when I'm not in there. I remember the one personal trainer came in there the one time, and I'm doing the pads. She's like, oh, can we do our class in here? Or can we do our instruction here? And I look at it, and I'm like, I'm like, because I move all around my pad. And it's like, well, I guess not. The boxing room. Not the, you come in here because you don't want to talk them out their room. I would come in there sometimes, and the people would bring, and then I'm like, yeah, you can't in the communal room, you can't leave bells on the floor. You can do it in the boxing room, or you can leave on here. I went in there the one announcement. I said, yeah, to all you muscle heads, you know, you gorillas that think it's funny, you know, you bring your things in here and you leave them in here. I said, I'll take a day off from work. I'll stand back here. and I'll find out who leaves these in here, and then I'll tear your arms off and beat your head with them. You know, I said, because this to me is disrespectful. And that yoga mat, same thing. Now, it's funny. Now, like I said, tomorrow night, there isn't a 4:30 class, so I can get in there unimpeded. And in fact, I'm actually, instead of changing in the locker room like I normally do, I'm changing at work tomorrow. I'm not even going in the locker room. I'm going straight in. So I don't want to talk to nobody. I'm irritated. And they need to know I'm irritated. I mean, I might even tape my hands at work and drive there with my hands already taped, you know, because I'm irritated. Now,
fight in the parking lot.
Yeah, no, I could do it in the parking lot too. Doesn't, I mean, it's only a 5-minute drive. You know, but when I get there, I want to get work in, and I was just joking around with a friend of mine. Normally, the guy that teaches the 5:45 class is usually late. Because I get my work in without a problem. In fact, if I wanted to do, I usually do 15 rounds in there. If I wanted to do another one or two rounds, I probably could because he's always late, which is fine. He was only there ever on time once, and he was there early, and he was blasting some salsa music and Zumba and while looking at himself in the mirror, which I thought was kind of creepy. But whatever. but he's always late. Here we go. The same hag that kind of annoyed me tonight was substituting his class of Zumba for the elderly, and she was on time, and I was just finishing up, and she came over to me and was like, excuse me, are you done? And I was actually in my last 10 seconds anyway.
Right.
Oh, she better pray to the Lord that he is not taking off tomorrow night and she's teaching his class, because if she's there on time and I see her, I will then run my workout an extra 3 rounds.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And are you done? No, I'm not done, because I'm finishing up what I didn't get last night. If I'm dead tired and flogged in sweat and ain't got nothing left in the tank, and I see her, I'll find something left in the tank. That'll be like the spinach that I need. I'll be like, you know, it's all I can stand. I can't stand it no more, and now I'm going to be a dick. And you know what? Go to management. Go right to hell to management.
That's funny.
Because you know,
if you really want to get a workout, you don't have to go to the gym. You can do what I just did the day, and your truck down in your backyard, and on the way back up, you come off by accident, and then spend 2 days trying to get the damn spring back on.
Well, yeah.
I don't know if you've ever had to do a job like that on your own, but there's this tool called a spring compressor. And it's got two big bolts, and then there's these brackets that go around the spring. And you basically have to crank the bolt after you've attached the brackets to the spring. You have to crank a bolt a little bit on each side so that the spring compresses itself. And, you know, obviously it takes a lot of force for some big spring like this on a truck to compress. So we're talking 4 hours with adjustable forces. Of me cranking that spring, trying to get it to compress enough to get it back into the housing. And, man, I've done workout machines before and all that stuff. Never in my life have I felt like I got a better workout than dealing with this aggravation. I didn't cut my knuckles up or anything, but just the way I mentioned there and the tight spaces. First, you've got to do the tightening. Then you got to do the loosening when it's done. So, oh, man, that was a workout. That was a couple days ago. And I'm still feeling it. But, yeah. I wouldn't recommend the busting the spring first part. But, you know, if it happens to you and you have to do it, it's worth the workout, that's for sure. And I did find out this last week that sometimes you don't even have to do your boxing workout to lose weight. With all the heat we've been having up here. I got down to 192 pounds for a low.
Nice.
Which is just 8 pounds away.
All right.
Away from 85.
We're getting ready. We're getting ready.
I am. There.
You can just hear the buzz. You can hear the buzz in internet radio land right now, thinking about it. All right, buddy. 8 pounds. You could do that in a couple of days if need be.
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
And I haven't done a single punch on the bag or anything in like a week. I'm so busy with the logging. So I can imagine once I get back to that, I'll be walking around at 185 like nothing. Then I'll be thinking about going down to the next weight.
Here we go. Yeah.
Back at high school. Wait, I'll be in trouble.
It's doable.
All right.
But listen, don't listen to me when you're talking about weight cut.
The other thing, too, logging has taught me is a little bit of defense. I don't know, you know, Tony, you've said before that you've done a little bit of log splitting.
A lot of times I would do it, you know, I would chop wood, or, you know, we would, my neighbor had a couple oak trees taken down, so we would bring the splitter over there and we'd split them, and then I would just take the logs and I'd throw them up the hill.
Yeah. So just having a splitter now, I just finally was able to get enough money to buy myself a new splitter after my other one got stolen. I'm throwing around a lot of logs right now, too, so that's working the chest area good.
It's a great workout.
But the other thing is the regular maul, you know, sometimes you can't really push a whole huge log up the hill, so you've got to use a regular maul to split the log and then, you know, split the rest of it with the splitter, so... Couple funny stories about that. Number one, you know, every time it seems like I throw them all down, the handle will flip back up on me and try to hit me in the face. So I got to do my head movements from boxing to get out of the way sometimes. So that's good. But yesterday I'm cracking wood out in the woods and I split this log right in half and a big mouse came right out of the center of the log in a big little mud hut that he built in there and came about 2 feet up in the air, almost to eye height. And I couldn't believe it. I didn't kill him, but I definitely evicted him. Or her. She's probably pregnant. So, just a couple funny stories there. But that's it for us. We got we'll be working on a guest next week. Try to get some from our friends over with the UFC fighters there, and we'll see what we can get for MMA fighter next week. And
Rich, Darren Crookshank would be interesting. You know, he came from traditional karate background, I guess, and he's got some fancy kicks, and maybe interesting to talk to him about the evolution of his game if we can get him on there. I noticed he was on the list.
Okay. I will let our lady know over there, Amanda, that Tom has a request.
All right. All right, guys. We'll take the weekend off, I guess. Man, what are we going to do? Well, yeah. I got plenty of DVDs.
I'm sure I'll get into some kind of nonsense.
Right.
All right, guys. Next week we'll do it.
All right. Thank
you. Okay. See you.
Adios. Thank you.
check on him, and back to the back, he's looking pretty bad. That was understandable. That's a pretty good hit run, guys, because he can hit it by hand. No matter where it is, not a bad two-hitter. He usually makes contact. Takes this time, it takes a strike.
Thank you.